right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
Hey, welcome down with Flight Deck. Podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with my my Hall of Fame co-host. But can you really have a Hall of Fame when there's only two people on a podcast?
I don't see why not.
So it's Cliffy D, by the way. Yeah. So, hey, it is funny. Now I heard all your stuff that you did last week. And by the way, props to your interview and props to the guys over at Piffle's podcast. They put on YouTube. Both you two get a had a great interview between yourself and the crew over there. What I thought was very funny is how well they thought Saskatchewan was going to basically clobber Montreal.
Yeah, they I understand completely as far as you got to support your team. Well, you got to support your team, and yeah, of course you want your team to do well, and that's always important, but. This is one of the reasons why I'm very, very reluctant to make bold predictions. I mean, I'll certainly speculate. I'll certainly talk about how things could be close or good or whatnot. I mean, but for me to actually put a number down on something and say, yeah, we're going to win by, 30 points or something crazy like that. Yeah. It's not in my nature. It's just one of those things that I remember being told when I was a kid by my mom. Keep your words soft and sweet, mm-hmm. because one day you might have to eat them.
Aw. I love good advice. You, son. Here's Crow. It's good. Take a bite. Do you want ice cream with that? I got pistachio. Blah. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I hear ice sales were pretty good in Regina after that burn.
Nice. What? A stat that was pointed out to me by Joey Alfieri, which I didn't put out before the game, is that Saskatchewan has never won two straight in Montreal, ever. So it was bound to happen. And what I thought was funny, because we're going to be talking about the Ben Cahoon thing, which was absolutely amazing, by the way, is that Montreal, the last two times that they have retired numbers, Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
For the last time was AC back in 14, and then the one that happened this week, they've both been versus Saskatchewan, and both of those games have been blowouts.
Yeah. I couldn't help but notice that too, that when it comes to retiring legends and playing the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, it just seems it's a magic combination for a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, you take a look at everything that happened this past Friday night, and we'll definitely get into the details of just how Montreal just completely dominated the game and pretty much, as far as I'm concerned, put the league on notice just to remind everybody, hey, we've been through some very difficult times these past couple of weeks, but don't count this team out yet.
Yeah, you know what? Keep putting us as number 8, number 7 in your power poll. Keep going. Now, it's very easy to get cocky too. We can't get too cocky. We do have the game. We'll talk about it in our last segment. We got BC coming in this week. We know that all teams from the West coming into Montreal, they usually don't do that well. But we can't get too cocky, can we? Because it's, sure, it's one game. Winnipeg, Saskatchewan's had its issues. But I think, as we've mentioned multiple times during the season already, is that this has been one wacky year in the CFL.
There's no question. It's been a year that I think if you were a Hollywood scriptwriter and you were trying to write this particular CFL season, nobody in the world would believe that you could come up with something as wild and creative as what this year has been so far. It's been mind-blowing, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. I mean, it's especially still the away teams still have their run. They still own the record when it comes versus home teams. It's just weird. If they say the CFL is quirky, well, there you go. we were talking about stats before. We do have, again, Steve is back this week. Steve Daniel with our stats segment. And we'll be playing that for you a little bit later. But you know what? Let's start off with what we were talking about before we get into the Ben Coon stuff and other stuff that's come across. You know, sometimes the football gods, Cliff, they give us stuff to talk about and stuff that we love to talk about, especially team-specific stuff. So, but first and foremost, let's talk about this win. It was a dominating win, obviously. It's 40-3 versus Saskatchewan. Sorry, 41-3 versus everyone. Got to give them all their points, right?
Absolutely. 41-3, man. Like, that's not chump change right there. That's a well, I mean, you take a look at what happened. I mean, five touchdowns were scored in this game. Have the Montreal Alouettes scored five touchdowns all season? I mean, I'm...
Yeah, good point.
I mean, you talk about what's the one thing that we've been, I won't say complain about, but the concerns that we've had to address over the past couple of weeks has been the lack of offense from Montreal. And what happens? It's almost as if Anthony Calvillo and Jacques Chaptelin are like, you know what? F you guys, we're going to show you offense. We're going to give you an offense. You want offense? We will give you offense. And sure enough, Kevin Glenn's in there. You know what you're going to get with Kevin Glenn. And he was just a man possessed. I mean, he just barely missed making 300 yards for the night. But, you know, he threw a couple of touchdowns. He handed off. Brandon Bridge also dived in for a touchdown. And heck, even in mop-up time, Rakeem Cato comes in to give Kevin Glenn a bit of a breather after, you know, all that amazing work. Mm-hmm. And he finds Daron Carter in the end zone. Yeah. I mean, you talk about an offensive juggernaut. I mean, again, this is just one game. And perhaps, again, not putting Saskatchewan down, but perhaps this isn't the best barometer to use as far as, is this going to be an indication of things to come for Montreal? But
yeah, hence my don't get cocky comment earlier. Yeah.
But I got to tell you, at the end of the day, this was still an absolute dominant performance
yes.
for Montreal. I mean, whether it was because it was Ben Cahoon night or whether it was for any number of reasons, I mean, this was what I would consider, and I'm sure a lot of fans too would consider to be real Montreal Alouettes football. But once again, don't take it from me. Let's hear from Kirk Cousins.
You like that? You like that?
You know, just like when having you can't have enough cowbell, you can't have enough Kirk Cousins, right, Cliffy D?
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, you know the Alouettes themselves. I mean, it was just total domination. Just to give a little bit of a perspective about a few of the things from what the Owls did this week. Their 38-point margin of victory versus Saskatchewan was actually the second highest. In the all-time series versus between these two teams. The biggest was 55 points in another blowout, 62-7 in August of 2000.
Wow.
I think it's the most points I've ever seen the Owls score, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's up there. That's, wow.
Yeah, and remember, wow. We were mentioning before, too, about the last time that the Owls had a game, a retirement game. So the last time the Owls scored 40-plus points in a game in a regular season game was that 40-9 drubbing of Saskatchewan on Thanksgiving Day 2014, which was a Anthony Calvillo day. So where to start? I know you brought up something and I wanted to ask you this question is that you were talking about that last touchdown that was scored from, you know, Rakeem Cato to
Daron Carter.
Thank you to Daron Carter. Do you think that was rubbing it in?
No. And also, too, you know what? You can say what you will about that. Is it running up the score a little bit? Yes, it is. And you know what? At the end of the day, what difference does it make? Because you take a look at tiebreaker situations, and one of the things that it does take a while to get there, mind you, but what if it came down to, you know, as far as making the playoffs, what if it came down to a tiebreaker situation where...
Or for the crossover.
Yes. And if all of a sudden you took the, and what's one thing we've been saying about the Alouettes is that they just don't have that killer instinct. They take their foot off the pedal. And yeah, does it look like it's piling on? Absolutely. But you know what? Sometimes you just have to do that. Some days you're the dog, some days you're the hydrant. And unfortunately for Saskatchewan, it wasn't their night this past Friday. And I just want to know, what if the tables had been turned? Would people be, you know, crying foul about that as well? Well, it would if the Alouettes were getting blown out 41-3 by the Riders. I highly doubt it. I'm sure some people would be complaining a little bit. I know Alouettes Nation would be complaining, and then people would be like, oh, sour grapes and blah, blah, blah about all that. But no, it's, I'm sorry. It's not like that. At the end of the day, you're there to score points. And sometimes, especially too, the reason, the result of that touchdown came as a result of Billy Parker perfectly reading the mail and returning a pick 65 yards. I mean, that was
an amazing game. He had an absolutely amazing game.
He was on fire.
He had that one, and he had the lateral recovery.
He got jobbed on that one. Yeah,
we'll talk about that more. But it's So yeah, I agree. First and foremost, in Kevin Glenn, 27 of 36, 299 yards, 2 touchdowns. Most importantly, no picks. Leading rusher for the Alouettes was Brandon Rutley. 12 carries for 42 yards. Receiving, Daron Carter had a monster game. Absolute monster game. 8 receptions, 115 yards, a touchdown. Rutley also had a receiving touchdown. An amazing, what an amazing run in the second half. Wow.
Like I said, that had broken play written all over it. Mm-hmm. And he just juked and jived, and it was a thing of beauty. There is no question about it. Like, that was for Rutley to pull that off was spectacular. And I know, like, everybody was up on their feet, and you just had that feeling he was going to get tackled. And no, he just sliced and diced his way to the end zone. And as soon as he dove right in, like, boom, that was beautiful. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Big time props for him.
Yeah, BJ Cunningham had the first touchdown of the day. I think it's very, I guess it very apropos is that not only did Samuel Jaguar have a rushing touchdown, but Brandon Bridge had a rushing touchdown for the Owls.
I tell you, like I said, this is total domination. I mean, it wasn't just one person just, you know, piling on here. I mean, unless you want to count Kevin Glenn as piling on, because he was the one that was leading these incredible drives over and over again instead of two and out, two and out, two and out. No, he was putting together drives, moving the chains very well. He made use of all of his receivers. I mean, Nick Lewis didn't score any touchdowns, but I tell you, this guy is a warrior in every sense. You ask him to do something, he does it. He makes a catch. It takes 6 freaking guys to bring this guy down. The guy is just like, I even said on Twitter, is it too early to nominate Nick Lewis as Montreal's most outstanding player for 2016? Because quite frankly, he's got my vote right now. The guy is a gamer through and through. And I mean, I just cannot say enough good things about this guy. I mean, he's just been such a wonderful addition. I'm so happy that he came back, because last year he wasn't sure if he still had that fire in him, if he was, you know, if it was just a bad season because the LOS had a bad season, or if maybe Father Time had finally caught up to him. But no, there's still a lot of gas left in his tank.
There's a lot of fire, and we found out a few weeks ago.
That's true. There's a lot of fire. There's a lot of fuel in there. Like Nick wants to win, and come hell or high water, he is going to do everything in his power to make sure that Montreal wins as many games as possible. That's one thing you can take to the bank.
And to be fair, for the first time in quite a while, our special teams did quite well. I mean, Stefan Logan, whether it was returning punts or whether it was returning kickoffs, he was just a smurf with a football. I say a smurf, and he's the same size as I am, or just slightly smaller than me. So it's... Yeah.
I tell you what, he did have, they finally got some lanes open for him, and he actually there's a lot of times he brought the ball back close to midfield, and that's what you want from your kick returner, is to be able to just create opportunities and move the ball down so you get as much field chewed up as possible, mm-hmm. so that when your offense comes on the field, it's just a couple of quick strikes and boom, you're in the red zone. I mean, you can't ask for more from your returner. And Stefan Logan, like I said, I mean, for a guy in his mid-30s, he's still got the wheels. He's still got the moves. Like, he is definitely a very welcome addition to this Montreal Alouettes team still. And I'm so thankful that we have someone like that returning kicks for us.
I think the only thing, luckily, that Boris Beta got off the snide. Unfortunately, he did miss one of his first field goals and is just having a very poor season. I mean, as anybody... happened to be following the press before the beginning of the game, the Alouettes brought in, was it 3 kickers? 3 kickers to, I guess, try out for the Alouettes. And, head coach Jim Popp decided to go ahead and stick with him. But he finally got out, he finally was able to make a field goal. But it's just, you know, it just seems to be he's just not having a very good year again. As I mentioned, you know, previously last week, he's not having a very good year so far. But it's, he made his field goal. I think there was a little bit of sarcastic clapping when he made it, right?
Well, and also too, it was like a 14-yard chip shot. So I mean, at that point, if you can't make that, then yeah, you may as well just hit the showers and call it a career. Because I know it's not easy kicking field goals or even point after attempts in CFL nowadays. But I mean, at the end of the day, if this is you have one job to do and it's kicking the football, you better make sure that you're putting the ball through the uprights or getting it as close to it as possible. And I'll tell you right now, these missed field goals aren't going to cut it. So take nothing away from his punting. He actually had a really great game in punting as well.
He did.
But at that point, if that's really where his strength lies, then you might as well keep him as a punter, and you're going to have to bite the bullet. I know it's going to cost you a roster spot, and I know that you want to have that extra roster spot available for any number of reasons, but maybe just for a little bit. It may not hurt to bring in another kicker to focus strictly on field goals.
If other teams can do it, if four other CFL teams can do it, so can we. So it's, again,
yeah.
The Owls have not been known to do that, at least since I can remember, since they've been back. But I know we talked about that last week. But let's talk about defense. Billy Parker. Mm. Billy Parker. I'll say it again. Billy Parker. What's his slogan again for his web series?
Oh, help the bear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you see me fighting a grizzly bear in the forest, don't help me. Help the bear.
That's right. And in this case, I was going to turn it around a little bit and say, in this type of situation, on Friday, you did not want them to poke the bear.
No, not at all.
Well, like, whether it be him or Bear Woods, by the way.
Who himself also had a very solid game. In fact, the entire defense was on fire, really. I mean, especially too, like at the end of the day, if you can only muster 3 points against a defense, they must have had a pretty good night. And I will say one thing, the Alouette secondary was absolutely phenomenal. After weeks of just getting just owned essentially by other teams, by Hamilton, by Toronto, and by Ottawa, they came to play. And they said, Jonah Johnson, I've spoken about many times of just how impressed I really am with him. But one name that's really stood out for me who played a very solid game was Jonathan Mincy. He's been one of the guys that's replaced both Mitchell White and Dominique Ellis in the secondary. And he has just been a very welcome addition to Montreal. Hasn't been spectacular, but he's been very solid. I mean, he's made a couple rookie mistakes, as rookies tend to do, but he has been, like I said, a very pleasant surprise. And I just think that the more playing time he gets, the more comfortable he gets in this particular secondary and defensive scheme, I think he's going to flourish. I think he's going to be one of those hidden gems that, again, you can talk about Jim Popp all you want, about his mismanagement of the salary cap and cutting players for any number of reasons. But at the end of the day, he still knows how to find talent.
Right.
And he found himself, I think, a very solid addition when it comes to Jonathan Mincy.
Yeah, I mean, it's the defense, everything seemed to be going well. And same thing with Jim Popp and him actually calling, you know, getting, I think he was he 2 for 2? In replay challenges this week,
he was like I said the minute he threw the challenge flag on the lateral that Mitchell Gale threw, which again Billy Parker got jobbed on, because my heart sank, because like, oh no, this, oh, like I you just, it's terrible to think that way because you just automatically assume the worst, but lo and behold, Jim was absolutely right. It was a lateral. It was a fumble, and yeah, that should have been two major returns for Billy Parker and potentially a touchdown, because he had nothing but clear real estate in front of him.
Yeah, and then the call on the challenge on the Daron Carter fumble, which was returned by Saskatchewan for at least at the time was a touchdown. And it seemed too that, you know, both of these plays seemed to, when it came to the replay center or the command center, is that they took a while. So you knew that they were looking at something, because I'm sitting next to you at the game and, you know, they return that for a touchdown. And if nobody knows, by the way, when there is a score when there's a score, keep your eye on the red hat. And the reason why is I had to find this out. I don't remember how I found this out. If I had to follow up with the CFL or with the Alouettes, and they mentioned how, what this was, is that, but after a scoring play, as you know, everything is looked at by the command center, as they do in the NFL. Watch the red hat. He'll have a lime green flag in his hand. If he puts it up, obviously it's good. But the entire time I'm watching him, I don't know if you were doing the same thing too, Cliff, is that I was watching to see if he was going to put that flag up. Then once he motioned to everybody to come over, you knew right away that they were going to be that the command center was really taking a hard look at that fumble by Daron Carter.
Yeah, and also too, with the amount of cameras that are on each CFL game, with the number of angles that are there, I mean, it's the one thing that they've prided themselves on is being able to get call as close to perfect as possible. And yeah, to their credit, even people at home, I remember going through my Twitter feed and people were just telling me, oh, he was down by contact. Like, oh, I'm glad you guys see it that way, but let's just hope the command center sees it. But you have to believe truly that if it's clear as day on television, if normal fans can pick out that this is getting overturned, then you have to have faith that the command center is going to call the play the right way. And sure enough, they did. Toronto was down by contact. Doesn't count, and we go about our merry way.
Now, for once, I mean, I think one of the main issues that still is haunting the Owls and our penalties. But as I said, for once, we did not have as many yards as Saskatchewan did. We only had 108 only 108 yards there, Cliff, on 11 penalties. Saskatchewan had 10 for 120. Still, that's one of the few things besides, you know, Boris Bede and his field goal kicking that seem to be still giving the Alouettes problems.
Still giving problems, but at the same time, too, you're also seeing a bit of improvement. Just like Bede finally busting out of his slump just a little bit with that 14-yard chip shot of a field goal. Maybe that's all it is. It's just baby steps, just little reminders that, hey, you know, things aren't so bad. So let's not overthink things too much. Let's just focus on taking care of things one thing at a time. And more often than not, sometimes those are the things that will get you over the hump, that will make you break out of your funk or your slump or whatever you want to call it and get things back on track. And I'm really hoping, I mean, penalties, there's not really a whole lot you can do about those other than the coaches really coming down on you discipline-wise. And again, to their credit, Montreal was a lot better this week with the penalties as opposed to weeks previous. So I definitely have to give the coaching staff a lot of credit for that. If that's something that's they've been working on, you can see the results right there. Right. As for Bede, well, I don't know if that little bit of competition got into his head or if it's kind of lit a fire under him a little bit, but it's still too soon to tell for that. I mean, I'm still, like I said, we've made it clear about our opinions about it, how we feel about bringing in an additional kicker. We'll see what happens. I mean, we will see. I think the game against BC this Thursday, if it comes down to special teams, especially coming down to kicks and all that,
right,
that could be a very telling sign indeed.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't want to think about that now. let's talk about halftime.
Let's
talk about halftime. Both you and I had the pleasure of being invited to go down on the field to be a part of the retirement ceremony for the great Ben Cahoon. You know, it's funny. We're down there for basically most of the second quarter in the east end zone. I'm trying to think. Either way,
west end zone actually.
Yeah, west end zone. And I want to be in my seat. I understand that some people you have to get the cheaper tickets in the end zone. I can't sit in the end zone. I really can't. Plus, we're at field level, so in the Alouettes were at the other end basically for most of the second quarter. So, but either way, I don't know most of their names. We met up with a few Alouette fans. At least give them a shout out, Cliff. Some of the ones that were there.
Yeah, I'd be remiss not to mention my buddy Mike. Mike and his dad were there, and you want to talk about some great Alouettes fans. These guys bring it every single game, and you could tell they were like kids in a candy store about the idea of being on the field for this monumental occasion. A few of the folks also too from Les Gars qui Vivent, the tailgate group that takes care of everybody before the game at their tailgate party at Molson Stadium. These guys were also invited onto the field as well. So, I mean, there was quite a few great fans that were invited and able to take part in this once-in-a-lifetime event. And, the idea that it's supposed to be limited to season ticket holders or longtime season ticket holders, I know that was a bit of a sore spot with you, Tim, but, I mean, it's at the end of the day, you want people who want to be there.
Right, yes, yes.
And just because you've been a longtime season ticket holder, I'm not saying that it doesn't make you any less or more passionate of a fan, but I kind of appreciate the fact that...
I will give props if some of these guys are more passionate than me. I'll give them that. I mean, it's just that, I mean, you know me. I'm not the one to paint my face and that type of stuff. I mean, it's, you know, I'm a low key fan most of the time. I mean, if you've seen me in my seat, I can be pissed off when many are, especially two games ago. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You know, it is what it is. I'm just happy I got the chance. That to me, that was the main thing. And I think the first thing for us, it was basically where are we going to stand? You know, we get on the field at halftime. You know, after the Owls, make it better by being up 22-0, but it doesn't matter where are we going to stand. You know, are we going to go all the way up to the beginning again, or are we going to stand where Ben Cahoon and his family come down the aisle? From there, it really didn't matter as long as we were there, right? I mean, it's there. We were able to take pictures, able to take video. I haven't checked it yet. If anybody hasn't seen the full ceremony, it's over on TSN. In their video section. I have to go check and see if I'm on. Somebody mentioned to me that they may have seen me, but you know, if I was, you know, no big deal. But still, the ceremony itself was what I would have expected it to be. It reminded me a lot of the one for AC 2 years ago. A slight difference too is that the players actually wore a patch, which I did not know until I saw it later that the players wore an 86 patch on their jerseys. The guy was very, very humble. I think that's the best way to say it. I mean, he always was when he was here. I don't know what else more to say.
Yeah. Speaking to that, I mean, there's one thing that always struck me with Ben Cahoon. It was just, yeah, he was so down to earth. He was such a warm, genuine person. And you laugh because, like, I would tell this guy, like, my God, you were so fantastic today. You really made great plays. You did this, you did that. And he's just, like, almost embarrassed. I'm like, I'm just doing my job, man. Like, it was just like it. Like, he never took himself to be a superstar. Like, I would say he is your prototypical CFL player in the sense that he's hardworking, mm-hmm. he's humble, mm-hmm. He's, you know, I don't want to say doesn't have a personality, because he definitely does have a personality, but he is not the, you know, flashy, showy type. Like, he just comes in, he does his job, goes home kind of thing. Like, and that's right. Like, he's very much a hardworking, you know, type of player. And it's one of those things that sometimes you don't appreciate until he's retired and you see other players come in and try to duplicate what he's done and just not even coming close to matching it. And this is why they only retire the very best. And let me tell you, Ben, I mean, to a man, was absolutely one of the finest players that this league has ever seen. And I consider myself extremely fortunate to have been able to have watched this guy from the moment he stepped onto the field until this past Friday when they finally immortalized his number 86. And the fact that now every time I go into Percival Molson Stadium and I look up at that Ring of Honor and I see number 13 Calvillo and number 86 Cahoon side by side, yeah, and knowing that I'm going to see that pretty much for the rest of my life and beyond, like, that's wonderful. Like, that's to me is the perfect way to properly show the respect and admiration that fans have for these players, is to give them both the ultimate honor of retiring their jerseys. And the fact that they're together like that, mm-hmm. just like they were on the football field together, that's fantastic. Like, that to me is just, like I said, just absolutely poetic. And I'm incredibly thankful and grateful to have been able to see this live and in person.
No, I agree with you. I agree. As in, it's, you know, we've been lucky to be, I've been lucky to be there for the Pringle one. I've been lucky to be there for others. And, you know, I was there for the AC one and this one too. It's, you know, you're able to look back, and especially with the highlights, the highlight montage that they had of him. I mean, the man could make some catches, and he's made some of the best catches ever in CFL history. If you want to put a highlight, it said you wanted just a highlight reel of his career, you saw that. And you know, I thought it was very funny too at the very beginning is that, you know, one of the very first things that they showed of him on that was what they showed. Number 32, Ben Cahoon. I was like, how many people actually know about that? You know, if you're a big fan, you know that he was number 32 before he was 86.
Yeah. And I'm almost positive I've seen at least once in my life at Percival Molson Stadium someone actually rocking a Ben Cahoon number 32 jersey.
No way, now, that's cool.
That's hardcore. You talk about a hardcore fan, like. And I'm sure the guy's probably gotten a lot of grief over the years for that jersey. Like, hey, he wears number 86. I'm like, no. Check your record stats, man. That's you want to go way back
one
there.
One year was the first year, right? First year only that he wore 32.
First year, yeah.
So it was a great experience overall. And again, if you haven't watched it, please go and check it over on TSN. The full 15 minutes is up there, and. One of the things, and this, I think the perfect way to end this segment, and it speaks volumes of who the man Ben Cahoon is. It's a story that you told me about what happened post game, and give everybody a quick story on what he did post game.
Okay. Well, after the game was over, obviously everybody's excited, everybody's happy. The Alouettes have won, and. You know, there's the players will usually congregate on the field afterwards. Like once they've gone through and then done their interviews and they've showered and changed and, you know, they come back out and they meet up with, you know, lucky fans that are lucky enough to get back onto the field after the game. They'll meet with them, meet with players, family members, the whole scene there. And it's unbelievable, but I saw off in the corner, Ben's out there and there's a whole gaggle of people just milling about him, and I'm assuming that okay, Ben must still be around signing autographs. That's cool. And this was, like I said, just a little bit after the game had finished. I stuck around. I spoke with quite a few players. I talked with a couple of coaches and all that, and just getting general thoughts, opinions, and everything of the game itself. And like I said, everything was extremely positive. It was great. But an hour and change later, I mean, people are starting to dwindle away and whittle away, and most of the players had already gone. You know, headed home for the night and everything like that. And just as I'm about ready to call it a night myself, I kind of look back in the corner of my eye and there's still a good number of people over there. And Ben is still over there signing autographs, taking photos, just talking with people. And it's remarkable. This comes back to everything that I was talking about when it comes to Ben Cahoon, the person, the fact that he's still there. And again, the guy just got his number immortalized. He's now very much a living legend. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's done, you name it, he's done it. I mean, he is by far one of the greatest Montreal Alouettes, if not Canadian Football League players, that this town has ever seen. And still very much a man of the people, still there giving back of himself. And to him, I'm sure signing an autograph or taking a picture, no big deal. And it's just amazing. The fact that he's still able to do that, and it still means so much to these fans to be able to have just a little bit of his attention, just to thank him for all the hard work he's done for the Alouettes over the years, and just to let him know how much he's been appreciated and all that. Like, he's giving back in that way. And it's just, like I said, it just speaks to the man that he is. And like I said, it just comes back to, I'm so thankful that I can say in my lifetime, I've been able to watch Ben Cahoon play and be a member of this Montreal Alouettes organization. And it's, like I said, I'm eternally grateful to have been able to say that, yes, I did watch that man play in his prime and watch him dominate the way that he did. Mm. And to see what kind of an absolutely wonderful person he is off the field as well, I mean, there's not enough good things I can say about Ben Cahoon. I could sit here for hours and talk about what an amazing person he is.
Oh, yeah. Let's just hope he does come back one day. Let's just hope, because you know, it would be nice to have him on. It would be very interesting to have him and AC on the same coaching staff. But you know, he's back at BYU as a I think he's a receivers coach again, right?
Yep, he's back as a receivers coach again. I mean, he was the reason why Cody Hoffman was able to get to the Alouettes with a little bit of his work. And who knows, maybe he can be sending a few more potential future Alouettes to Montreal by way of his coaching.
Alouettes Flight Deck presents Just the Stats with CFL statistician Steve Daniel.
It's been a few weeks, Steve. Welcome back.
Thank you. Always enjoy coming on the show.
Now, as you know, and people were saying, well, why would we haven't you had you on for the past couple of weeks? And, you know, we're literally just talking about it and saying, well, listen, we want to have some stuff that's relevant. You know, we're using your God-given talent to be able to come up with some of this stuff. And I think you agree this, like, we want to make sure that we have some stuff that people have never heard before, whether you read your pregame, you know, your pregame notes or not, right?
Absolutely. You generate these kind of statistics, so they tell a story, and you find out something interesting about the game. It's not real interesting to watch the odd game that's a bunch of 3-yard rushes and 17 two and outs. Mm-hmm. That's not worth talking about.
No. It has been a very tough year again when it comes to injuries, but quarterbacks and their first CFL starts, how do they fare?
Well, last year we had a whole lot of first-time starters. Yes. In fact, I think there were 11 of them. The first one was Rakeem Cato, and
yep,
we ended up with Keith Price. And out of those 11, only 3 guys won. And that kind of fits the long-term pattern, Tim. And I charted all these debuts, and they win about 1 time in 3. I think it's, 36%. Mm-hmm. So that's not particularly good, but it's not particularly surprising either.
No, I wouldn't think so either. I mean, and something that I've mentioned too before to my co-host is that usually these teams do not have any film at all on these players. And I would suspect that, you know, as I said, this 1 out of 3 times, this guy is good enough to be able to do what he needs to do and to lead these teams to wins. Didn't the quarterback this week for Toronto have a record also when it came to Henry Burris? Because I know Henry Burris, if you want to put a quarterback up against somebody right now, Henry Burris would be the guy to do it, right?
Yeah. Burris, he's been the guy to go up. I think it's against 10 guys making their debut. And lately, you know, and you'd think with Henry's experience, and Henry's a terrific guy, I met him a few times, but they are eating him alive. Like, Toronto beat him again, so that's 5 in a row where guys are making their debuts against Henry, and they all beat him, which is, to me, really surprising. It just doesn't fit the pattern.
No.
But Logan Kilgore had a very good game.
Yes,
I was impressed.
Yeah.
And Toronto's relying on those kind of guys because they've lost Ricky Ray, 3, 4, 5 times since they signed him or got him in the trade?
Yeah. It sounds a lot very similar to what with Montreal and trying to find their actual starter. So it's – but that's for another day. I think also what's interesting, we talk about quarterbacks, but also leading to something that I guess it doesn't seem to come up all that often, but it might. We'll see with the stats, how the stats reflect this. But we've had some perfect kickers, and just this past week, a perfect game by a kicker. When it comes to perfect kickers, field goal wise, are there a lot of them? I mean, is it something that you've seen that's done quite a bit? I mean,
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot since you're so since you're so sharp with the numbers as well. And you know, what do you think is the most number of attempts that any player has ever had in a game and not missed? Yeah, it's not one, it's not two, and it's not 5 because I think Liram Hiarelau made all 5 of his attempts.
I'll just pick a number. I'll say 10. Why not?
David Ridgway was 8 for 8, and Mark McLaughlin, a few years later, mm-hmm, was 8 for 8. There's some 8 for 9s. There's some 7 for 7s. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about a really interesting number, and that is combined, where both kickers, neither of them missed. You and I were just messing around with that
right
before the show started. And I can find 6 games where both kickers tried 10 field goals and did not miss.
Wow.
And that's when you mess the data around a little bit. And that's amazing, actually, when you put that in the context of Rennie Paradis having missed a convert in 5 consecutive games.
Huh.
I'm not sure that's ever happened. I got to try to find that now. But it, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes it interesting. because those are events that change the outcome of a game, which makes it relevant.
You would think, yeah, you would think a kicker going 8 for 8, you would think that they would win the game. It's not something I asked, so I'm not gonna ask because stats may not be available to you, but at the moment, but you would think, you would assume that they would have won that game. I mean, considering they were responsible for 24 points.
Well, we can check that. There is a way to check that, and let's do it live.
Okay, sure.
So we have our list of all-time games, and we can pull that up. So this one is David Ridgway on July 23rd, 1988. So if we go back in our little time machine here. Saskatchewan 26, Edmonton 15. So they won that game.
Yeah.
And Mark McLaughlin is the only other guy with 8 in a game where he didn't miss. And that was August 5th, 1996. And they won as well. So, yeah, pretty successful.
Yeah, you'd think. Yeah, it was also, and it's just something that I had noticed, and it seems to be that there are quite a few players so far this year that seem to be on a pretty good clip when it comes to yards.
One of my favorite topics. Yeah,
when it comes to the, I mean, how many do we have? How many are close? How many are even sniffing the league record?
Well, your listeners are going to know Darrell Walker, mm-hmm. Adarius Bowman, Chris Williams. Mm-hmm. There's a fourth, Naaman Roosevelt of Saskatchewan. These guys are all 540-something plus through 5 or 6 games. So they're in the 110 to 120-plus yards per game. Mm-hmm. Two of them are on pace for over 2,000, which is above the league record held by Alan Pitts, 2,036. But most people have forgotten, or at least a lot of people that approach me and say, well, gee, 18 games, great. Well, it hasn't always been an 18-game schedule.
That's true.
So let's look at Terry Greer. He was the first to get to 2,000, and that was in 1983. And that guy played 15 games. That's a lot of yards.
That is a lot of yards.
But isn't the best. And I just found this out today, a mistake that only I could make, and that badly. They didn't count the games played real well back then. And it's a Montreal player, Hal Patterson. He is the trivia answer to my two players that I consider to be the most talented of all time, Hal Patterson and Jackie Parker. Mm-hmm. Patterson was the best defensive back of his time, the best kickoff returner of his time. He averaged 147 yards a game in 1956 with Sam Etcheverry. After nine games, he had 1,401 yards. That's insane.
That's insane. Even by today's standards, that's insane.
It's all real, and it's just as real as anything we have today. So that's why digging up some of this history just shows you that the players of today, not really any better than they were in 1956. There's just more of them. And, you know, there's some supreme talents, but they're not exclusive to 2016.
Right.
And so that Darrell Walker has, you know, his pace is 2,311 yards. So that would make the record.
Wow.
But Darius Bowman was on that kind of pace, and he didn't have a particularly great game on the weekend. But watch this weekend for Naaman Roosevelt.
Yeah. One game can do it. One as we've noticed, one game can easily do it. For anybody, before we let you go, Steve, anybody who happens to read your game notes this week, any teasers that you might have?
Yeah, I had a really close look at some of the Montreal trends lately. They haven't had a winning streak of 2 games in a while. They're going to be trying for that. I think they're 1-6 the last 7 times they've tried to do it. And particularly this one's really important. And that is, I think 2 weeks ago in the game against Toronto, we had Bear Woods and we showed him with 10 tackles. And our clubs have a right to challenge whether a stat is correct or not. And they always do it respectfully.
Right.
And one of the fun things for me is to go back through those plays. And we found 3 that were clearly should have been credited to Bear Woods in situations where the stats crew member would have had a tremendous challenge in picking out a tackle out of a pile of people. So we gave him 3 more, and rightly so, and he tied Chip Cox's club record of 13. That was an impressive thing coming out of Montreal, which I feel good about that, because then you've got the credit where it's supposed to.
Exactly.
And ultimately, that's what my job is to credit the players with what they deserve, and that's the best part.
Nice.
Anyway, that's what's been going on.
As usual, greatly appreciated, and you are able to show fans that stats, while sometimes some people may think that they don't really mean much, they're a lot of fun to hear about.
I appreciate that.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
Next week. Bye-bye.
The thing that we need to talk about now, something that came over, you know, I happened to mention about Brandon Bridge, and it came over the wire today that the Alouettes released Brandon Bridge from the team. And I for one, and both, I think you actually echoed my sentiment quite well on Twitter, is that he should not have been the one to have been – he should not have been the quarterback to have been released. At first, I was under the impression that Brandon Bridge was making the league minimum, but I was told that he is making, quote-unquote, well above the league minimum, which I'm not surprised about, but I'm curious to know. It makes me curious how much more, because well above can mean anything, as you and I both know, when it comes to the salary cap.
And quarterbacks are typically paid more than the average player, so it's
– right.
Like I said, I won't put an actual dollar amount on it because I don't know, and I don't like to speculate. It's not my business to know how much money he was making or what exactly. But like I said, I really don't want to believe that it came down to a few bucks here and there being the difference to this guy staying on the roster and being released.
Well, and that's the thing too, because this is something he had said to me specifically in a conversation a few weeks ago. Is that he just wants to play. He just wants a chance to be able to play quarterback, which I completely agree with. You know, he didn't want to play, he didn't want to be on the practice roster, make a fraction of the money that he's currently making. But, you know, he was summarily just put, for some reason, and reasons that we may not know about, is why he was put as fourth string quarterback, which meant that he was usually inactive. But the past 2 weeks he's been active is because Vernon Adams had got a concussion in practice, and you know, unbeknownst to us, because it really wasn't a big deal made out about it, is that he was placed on the sixth game. So it basically left us with Glenn, Cato, Bridge, and then Crompton, who is still on the sixth game himself. So it really makes me wonder, you know, all the stuff that we've seen so far from DJ over at RDS, you know, four teams are interested in Bridge. And that concerns me. You know, we've talked about the same with the PK thing, and is PK going to come back and bite the Canadians in the ass next year? If Brandon does get picked up by another team, is he going to come back and bite us in the rear?
I wouldn't bet against it. I still think there is a lot of raw talent in Brandon Bridge. I definitely think that he was grossly underutilized here. That's not to take away from the efforts that Rakeem Cato and, to a lesser extent, Vernon Adams have done here in Montreal in 2016. But I just really don't think that Bridge truly got the opportunity to do much beyond short yardage situations. And I personally would have liked to have seen him get more action than what he did even in the preseason. And that comes back to what you had said. You've been saying from the get-go, since our two preseason games, mm-hmm. is why is Kevin Glenn getting so much playing time
where we should be about six freaking quarterbacks on the roster.
Yeah, and especially too when the name of the game is seeing who's going to eventually replace him. I don't want to put it like that necessarily, especially since, you know, how well overall he's played.
If somebody has to replace Glenn, how about that?
Fair enough. But at the end of the day, we are still essentially looking for the quarterback of the future. Have we gone ahead and we have anointed Rakeem Cato as the future, or Vernon Adams even, when he's not on the six-game injured list? I mean, to me, it's still very much a competition. And the fact that you've cut Bridge loose and given him the chance to go to another team, and if they can take that opportunity to nurture him and make him a more well-rounded professional, I mean, we're just going to end up with egg on our face because we had this veritable stud in the lineup and essentially did nothing with him.
Right. No, and that's why it's so frustrating to me too, is because I look at the current people that we have on the roster, and to be fair, we don't know what Jim Pop's thoughts are, whether AC had a say in whether to keep Cato or to release him, because I mean they asked him basically, you know, as we were told, is he was asked to take a pay cut. He said no. The Owls released him. So. Yes, I think he was the wrong. Not just because he was a Canadian quarterback. That was cool in itself. You know, not because he played at South Alabama, which to me has ties. But I think somebody else should have been let go. Somebody else should have had to take in that pay cut. If it was possible, could you have given it to Cato? I'm still under the impression he's making a league minimum. But could it have gone to Adams? No. They're not going to cut Adams based on they gave up a first-round draft pick for him and signed him to a three-year extension. So that leaves Crompton and that leaves Cato, in my opinion. I think we saw the writing on the wall, Cliff. Mm-hmm. Being a fourth-string quarterback, you had a guy already who's, again, you had Crompton who's on the sixth game, who could very well come off very soon. Team that is in some cap trouble because we're seeing today now also that they're shopping somebody else. So it's as I mentioned to you in a text earlier today, the issues that the Alouettes are having, they have caused themselves. They have nobody else to blame but themselves. You're in this cap issue. Come on. Do you need six quarterbacks? No. I understand that you have other teams that are having some issues with quarterbacks. We've had these in the CFL for the past 3 years, but other teams have had established backups. Goes back to my Drew Tate thing last week, my rant last week with Drew Tate, and you biting my head off. You calling me a little bitch or something, whatever you called me.
I never called you a little bitch. Come on.
Whatever it was. Bastard, bitch, whatever. they've made their own bed. But in my opinion, as a fan, unfortunately, only as a fan, I still think that they made a mistake in releasing him and asking him. You know, usually they don't mind to take a pay cut. He just wants to play, dude. He just wants to play.
I think that's what would bother me more than anything else is the fact that we didn't really get a chance to see Brandon Bridge play other than lining up at the goal line and plunging forward for the first down or for a touchdown. I mean, he's got two touchdowns this season, which is great, but I mean, it doesn't really make him a better quarterback or a worse quarterback for that matter, but we never really truly got a chance to see what he could have done. He only started one game last season, and it was essentially a meaningless game against Saskatchewan to end the season. Mm. He barely got any reps in training camp. I mean, especially for a team that had at one point said that they wanted to help be a part of the development of great Canadian quarterbacks. Anthony Calvillo himself had said that when he gets into coaching, one of the things he wants to do is give back to the Canadian game. And that includes helping to develop great Canadian players, including quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden you've essentially flipped the script and now you've got a Canadian quarterback on your roster. He's sitting there dying on the vine. And instead of trying to do something to at least get him some more playing time, a little more than, like I said, just the short yard situation, you just go ahead and you cut him. And without any real viable options, because now you take a look at it, who are the quarterbacks for Montreal? Kevin Glenn, Rakeem Cato, can't use Vernon Adams on Thursday because he's on the sixth game. Jonathan Crompton, unless they pull him off, unless he is absolutely ready to go as the third quarterback. So now you're going to bring in someone else, another scrub just to fill this void? Or are you actually really truly going to go with two quarterbacks, period?
I have a sneaking suspicion that and I always thought, and you and I said it, if Adams was day-to-day, why did they place him on the one game?
The sixth game.
No, why wouldn't they have placed him on the one game instead of the sixth game?
Right, absolutely. And again, concussion's definitely something you don't want to screw with, especially since he's still very much into his first year as professional. The last thing you want to do is set him up for failure down the road with any sort of concussion issues. So I can understand and appreciate the need to want to be careful with him in that regards. But by that same token, you've got that third quarterback already in Bridge. And to me, it's a very puzzling decision to let him go. Like I said, unless we know for certain that Crompton's going to be pulled off the six-game list right away and given a chance to do what he can, whether it, win, lose, or draw, they're going to go with him if they're invested enough in him to give him that chance, especially if it's at the cost of cutting a national player. Even though
that too, on top of that, very good point. But usually, but doesn't really matter, as you know, when it comes to quarterbacks. National versus international doesn't mean anything for quarterbacks. But
right, it's a moot point in that sense. Right. But just the idea.
But you got Crompton too. If you pull off Crompton, he hasn't had any reps in almost more than a calendar year.
That's correct.
So useless. When's he going to get his reps? Unfortunately, some quarterbacks are just come off the bench type of guys. If you don't give them the reps, what are you going to do? And as we're seeing, as I mentioned before, we're seeing this in the CFL. Some guys can play well. Rakeem Cato played very well as his first start, but then they had footage on him. They had tape. They had video.
He got figured out.
Exactly.
And eventually everybody gets figured out. And it's just a matter of, are you able to change? Are you able to keep everybody guessing? And whether Cato has that or not still remains to be seen. But, I mean, at the body of work that he's done so far, I hate to say it, but he's been figured out. So, I mean, unless he's going through a major radical change behind the scenes and we're just not seeing it when he steps out onto the field, it really makes me wonder. It's another point that was brought up to me earlier today was that Rakeem Cato had actually kind of bailed on the Alouettes last season.
That's right.
And
look at the beginning of this season with the quote-unquote rumors. I mean, we can take them for what they were, but...
Yeah, and I don't want to get into rumors too much either because, again, it's all hearsay at that point. But at the same time, it still is very much something to consider. Whereas Brandon Bridge had no such issues. Came in with a workman's attitude, and he just, like you said, he just wanted to play. He just wanted to get a chance to play quarterback. And that's not too much to ask as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you got someone that's ready to go, ready to deliver, just needs the opportunity. Why not give it to him? I mean, what's the worst that would have happened if for the game that Rakeem Cato had started, if they would decide to go with Brandon Bridge? Would it really have made much of a difference if we got blown out by Hamilton as opposed to having a Rakeem or Brandon Bridge behind center as opposed to Rakeem Cato? I mean, would that have really made a huge difference, or would that have just possibly opened up the eyes to someone else as far as what we have for quarterback in Montreal?
All right. Again, we're Monday here, and this is when we're taping, and then this is something that's going to, I'm sure, we're going to hear more about this over the next couple of days. So it's going to be very interesting. And I would not be surprised if by the end of the week, by the time the Owls play, maybe on Thursday, that Brandon Bridge is on another CFL roster.
Quite frankly, I'd be very surprised if by the end of the week he's not on another CFL roster. I really do believe in him as a player. He's got a great personality. He's a great person to sit and talk with. He's got a fantastic attitude for the most part. You've never heard him say any cross words or have any sort of diva attitude or anything like that. I mean, like I said, he's just come in, does his job. He's a hard worker. He's Canadian. What do you expect? So, I mean, yeah, I'd be very surprised if by the end of the week someone doesn't add him to the roster. I honestly would be. I don't want to speculate on which teams could possibly use him. I mean, at the end of the day, I would say who couldn't use a Brandon Bridge in their lineup?
I'm sure teams that have money in the salary cap. But anyways, I don't want to regurgitate what I've just been talking about. Don't forget, there are many places you can contact us. We are on social media. You can do so by contacting us on Twitter. That's Alouettes FL Deck. You can also go to Alouettes Flight Deck on Facebook. Also, do not forget that if you want to send us an email for whatever reason, question, comments, complaints, whatever it may be, we're open to everything. It's alouettespodcast@gmail.com. And if you happen to miss any part of this show, or if you want to check out any of our previous shows that you may have missed, you can do so at multiple places, not only at Podbean, but on iTunes and at Google Play Music. We got BC coming up here, Cliff. BC. I'm looking at this here. The last three times that we have played BC, road or away, we've had three different quarterbacks start. That's the type of issue right now that the Alouettes are currently having.
Yes.
last three, by the way, was Troy Smith. We know how well that experiment went. Mm-hmm. Rakeem Cato and then Tanner Marsh. He got the last start.
Yeah.
The positive thing about the Alouettes is that at home they are they've been pretty dominant versus the BC Lions. The 25-11 since all time versus BC at home, and they have won the last 7 out of 9. So I think it's just a matter now of, it's not necessarily that did the team peak, just did the team versus Saskatchewan show us what we knew that they could do, or was it that Saskatchewan was that bad? because, you know, BC, you know, even though they, you know, they are facing a different quarterback than they did last year, this BC team is pretty good.
They're pretty good. The only thing I couldn't help but notice is I just don't know which BC team is going to show up in Montreal. I mean, you're talking about a team that has played extremely well against Calgary, beating them at the first game of the season, barely, and then also barely losing to them this past Friday as part of the doubleheader after the Alouettes Rough Riders game. They've looked absolutely dominant against Hamilton and also against Saskatchewan, but have also lost to Toronto. I mean, like I said, it's just baffling. I just don't know which BC Lions team is going to show up. Like, which one do you prepare for? Because, yes, the talent is there. Like, I say very much like Montreal. I remember earlier this season, one of our Twitter friends, Mark Fulton, had said he made some predictions of his own. And he said, you watch and see, BC and Montreal are not as bad as everybody's making them out to be. Mm-hmm. And true to his word, well, maybe not so much with Montreal over the past couple of weeks, but BC, by and large, has been a very competitive team. They haven't looked great at times, but other times they've looked magnificent. So it's just a matter of how do you prepare for a team like this? I mean, you look back at history, and you're absolutely right. Montreal, for the most part, has been extremely dominant versus BC at Percival Molson Stadium. Just like when the Alouettes go out to BC, with the exception of last year, it's almost guaranteed win night for the BC Lions when the Alouettes are in town.
Right, right.
So, I mean, you almost throw history out the books now because you just don't know with both these teams what to expect. I mean, has Montreal sort of turned the tide? I mean, was this past Friday's game just I hate to use the word fluke, but let's call it like that. Was it a fluke? Was it just the fact that maybe Saskatchewan really is just that bad and we're going to be brought back down to earth, just like we brought them back down to earth after they just barely beat Ottawa for their first win? So it's definitely going to make for an interesting game, that's for sure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, people need to remember too that this is a BC team that's come off of a huge collapse. You know, they gave up 22 points to the Stampeders in the fourth quarter last Friday. A team that was up, what were they up at one point? I'm trying to check it real quickly here. They were up at one point.
I know at least twice they were up by two scores easily, and both times they let that lead slip, and you want to know why I'm not mad that Montreal was piling on the points against Saskatchewan? If BC had adopted that same strategy and just, like I said, keep the pedal to the metal and just don't let Calgary back into the game, and that's what happened, not once, but twice. When you blow a 14-plus point deficit.
Yeah, it was 41-26. 41-26, there was less than 5 minutes left.
But at the end of the day, I don't care what the score is. You don't let the other team hang around. If you give them a chance, especially in this league, all it just takes is a couple of opportunities, a couple of two and outs, and you're back in this thing. And sure enough, that's what happened. Like, Calgary just managed to hang in there, get themselves to overtime, and they did what they had to do. They won the game. And that was a completely winnable game for the BC Lions. And maybe with a little bit more killer instinct, maybe if they just dug a little bit deeper, they would have gotten that win in Calgary. And can imagine, like, just leading the season series 2-0. I don't know if they played twice or three times, but the fact that you have two wins over a very good Calgary team, that's nothing to sneeze at. And I that would make me very concerned having them come back into Montreal the week afterwards. But now, like I said, with this, like I said, lack of killer instinct for the most part, I mean, that kind of opens things up, especially since now maybe Montreal has turned the corner. Maybe they did finally realize that they've got, in addition to an incredible defense, maybe they do have that offensive prowess that was sorely lacking. And maybe now this is, you know, maybe they just needed a game like they just played against Saskatchewan to really find themselves a little bit. But I guess we'll see, because this is the last of that 11-day stretch of three games. This is the last game for that, so
yeah, and considering that, and I don't think you know, Montreal had come in. It's tough. I mean, this many games, you're not going to think you're going to do that well. I mean, the Owls themselves being able to win on 4 days rest, which is what I think Ottawa did last year. I think when Ottawa and Montreal met last year, I think they're coming off 4 days rest. It's tough. It's true. It's going to be the end of the thing. But the thing is, the plus is, and unlike last time, they were at home. This time, again, they're following it up with a game at home. They've already won. They have some momentum. They are playing a little bit better. It's just a matter of what is Jonathan Jennings going to bring to the, you know, to the game for BC, and also who's going to show up for the Owls. You know, which Owls team is going to show up? You know, are we going to have the team that showed up last week, or are we going to have the team that showed up the week prior, or before that?
No, they're valid questions, and like I said, I want to believe that Montreal's finally turned a corner. I think that this was the kind of game against Saskatchewan that they needed to play, and just get that confidence. Like I've often said, sometimes the only way to make yourself feel good is to make somebody else feel bad.
Right.
And it was about time that the Alouettes stopped making other people feel good about themselves. They got a chance this time. They're the ones that are kicking sand in people's faces. They're the ones that are bullying people around. And good on them for doing that. And I really hope that they take note of this. They remember that feeling. Because a lot of the players afterwards I spoke with after the game, they were happy. They felt good. In fact, a lot of them even said, I'm not even tired. I could play again if you need me to. I mean, especially when you consider it. Like, having just played 4 days previous, you think these guys would be completely winded. But no, they were fresh. They felt good. They were ready to go. I mean, really, maybe winning does cure everything. But I think that there's a lot to be said for positive momentum and just knowing yourself, really. And I think that's what it's come down to now. I think these guys have to know what they can do and the potential they have within themselves. And like I said, I'm not one for predictions. I'm not one go out and say that, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to go and we're going to kick BC's ass or anything like that. It's not about that at all. Without knowing just which BC team is going to show up at Percival Molson Stadium this Thursday, the only thing we can, as Alouettes fans, hope for is that Montreal remembers that good feeling they had this past Friday, and they just do everything they can to bring it with them on Thursday.
Yeah, I think for them, Montreal has the history on their side versus BC at home. I agree with you. It's no point in it. As long as the Alouette team of last Friday shows up, the Owls have a very good chance at winning this game. And I know that's cliche, guys. I know that's cliche, but you can predict till the cows come home. You can look at all the stats that you want, but if your team doesn't show up, then you're not going to win. I think if the Alouettes can score 20 or more points, I'll say this. I think if they can score 20 or more points, I think they'll win this game. That I will say. But then again, look at the score last week for BC. You know, 44-41, man. I mean, it's who would have thought?
Yeah, if they can find a way to contain some of the receivers, especially Manny Arsenault, who we all remember from last year was running his mouth about Montreal not being a very good team. And I'm sure if you were to ask him again this week, I'm sure his opinion hasn't changed very much about that. But to a man, he's one of their better receivers, and being able to contain him will be key. You know he's going to be testing guys like Ethan Davis and Jonathan Mincy. If he gets a chance to torch those guys, he'll definitely take every opportunity to do so. So, I mean, I really hope that these guys take note of that, appreciate the fact that, you know, this guy, like him or hate him, he brings it on every game. And he's definitely someone that you just have to play him hard, but play him smart.
Yeah.
And if the rest of the defense can just get in Jonathan Jennings' kitchen and just make his night miserable. I mean, he threw a couple of very crucial picks against Calgary and just looked – he didn't look awful, but he just looked ordinary. I mean, if we can make Jonathan Jennings look ordinary, there's a great chance that Montreal could walk out with a victory. Not a decisive victory, I would think, but they will definitely compete for sure. And again, Montreal's done very well with in playing Western teams, and it doesn't get much more Western than BC, let me tell you.
I tell you. Should be good. Should be a good game. Won't be anything at half. I don't know what the Alouettes are kind of planning for halftime now. What do you mean I got to stay in my seat for the entire game this week? How dare they? Maybe I'll go get a drink. I don't know.
Cool. Well, they do have that beautiful fan zone for fans.
That's true, too. Yeah.
We got a stats board. We can sit and look at stats.
Which they got. Second week in a row. Props to you guys. I still think that some of the fonts are just a touch small. But hey, you guys are doing well. I just make it a little bit bigger, in my opinion. Just make it a little bit bigger. On some other ones.
Yeah. Maximize your space.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. All righty. Well, you know what? I hope you guys enjoy the game this week. Again, if you have any comments to us, just you can send them to us via Twitter or Facebook or email us. But Cliffy, I will see you this Thursday for Thursday Night Football. Not my favorite day. Actually, rest of the Alouettes home games up until Labor Day are on Thursdays. I'm not the biggest fan of them. But anyways, so everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.